My name is Brian Bonsenauer, and this session is on the second in the series on the origin of the universe and human creativity. And I titled this session "At the Very Center of Creativity," and we'll get to that in a minute here. But where we left off, kind of at last, with our last session, was with a question sort of hanging. This question: where does creativity come from? And we talked about this from the point of view of thinking about the origin of the universe being the place or the event out of which everything else has come, out of which all of the physical matter that we see, but also the mental activity that's going on in you and me, the emotional activity. When you saw your children this morning and felt that sense of love, or looked up at the mountains and felt that amazing revelation of being in this beautiful valley, that emotional activity, that came out too of this center of creativity, the origin of everything that is. Everything that is. Not just the wood in this chair, or the tree out there, or the chipmunks that are running around, but us as well, all of our experience, our insight, our inspiration, and our creativity. So that's kind of where we left off the last time, with thinking about the creativity coming out of this origins. And then the question I left people with the last time, that I want to start with this time, is that sense of, well, if that point, the current model for understanding the universe says that the universe came out of a single quantum event, a single pinprick, all of the stuff that we see in the universe, the trillions of galaxies and the billions and billions of stars in each of those galaxies came out of a single pinprick, a single point. So where is that point? I mean, let's go find it. You know, it was often the case for the tribal peoples and the early peoples to, you know, find the point of where God lived, you know, on the mountainside or near the deep, clear lake, and then settle there, you know, be there, so they could be next to that creativity, that sense of awe and wonder. So if the scientific enterprise has told us that all of creativity came out of the single point, well, let's go there. Let's find it, you know. If we can find it, let's, you know, try to move there, because this must be this amazing place of creativity. The creativity that could fashion a hummingbird, you know, that could build these mountains, let alone all of the other stars in this galaxy. That point has got to be pretty special. So let's find that point. So where does creativity come from? Maybe another way of saying that: where is the center of creativity? Let's find that center. And we'll be there, or go there. Okay, so let's see. Let's see if we'll tell a little bit of the story here. For those of you who weren't here for the first session, I want to just do a little taste of the story coming out of a book by Brian Swim and Thomas Berry called The Universe Story. This is a book that I highly recommend for exploring or thinking about or getting more in touch with the story
of creation as we now understand it, based on the past 70, 80 years of the scientific inquiry. Okay. Recaptured, recast in a story, not in a set of papers and public, mathematical equations. Those are very useful, and I love those things. But to recast it as a story, I think, is tremendously valuable. And let me just give you a little taste of that here. So let me tell you a story. And this a wonderful storyteller once said, I can't remember who it is or where I picked it up, but to begin a story, it's always good to begin with, I don't know if it happened this way, but I know that it's true. Originating power brought forth a universe. All the energy that would ever exist in the entire course of time erupted in a single quantum, a singular gift, existence. If in the future, stars would blaze and lizards would blink in the light, these actions would be powered by the same numinous energy flaring forth at the dawn of time. There was no place in the universe that was separate from the originating power of the universe. Each thing in the universe had its very roots in this realm. Even space-time itself was a tossing, churning, foaming out of the originating reality, instant by instant. Each of the sextillion particles that foamed into existence had its roots in the quantum vacuum, the originating reality. The birth of the universe was not an event in time. You see, time begins simultaneously with the birth of existence. The realm of power that brings forth the universe is not itself an event in time, nor a position in space, but is rather the very matrix out of which the conditions arise that enable temporal events to occur. Though the originating power gave birth to the universe 15 billion years ago, this realm of power is not simply located there at that point in time, but is rather a condition of every moment of the universe, past, present, and to come. Part of the story, then, that first instant of the story as we understand it. Just to give you a sense that this is kind of a new question, this understanding of the universe brings to light, this sense of the universe coming out of this single place, this single moment, this beginning of time, is a new, rather a new perspective. I mean, it's only been in the past maybe 60 years that this idea has dawned upon human consciousness. Some of the other models for thinking about how the universe is and was, because there's been lots of people thinking about this question for a long time. Some of the others are that the universe is static, that it's fixed. It's sort of this stage that's there, just sits there, and then we do our thing in the universe. The stars are in the universe, they're sort of hung there, and the Earth is kind of situated in this universe, and it's fixed, it doesn't change. Another view of the universe is that it's cyclical. This is reflecting on the experience of day and night, summer and winter, these great cycles of nature. Well, then the universe must be cyclical. It must
sort of ebb and flow, go and come. We have the universe as this big circle, cyclical event.
And at the beginning of the scientific method, but maybe before that too, was a model of the universe or an image of the universe as this thing that happened, that sort of this tightly wound spring that's now running down. This thing that was really great long ago, but now we've kind of gotten the short end of the stick, you know, everything's sort of petering out. So, a running down universe. Yeah. When I was a kid, life was great, but you know, now it sort of sucks. That sort of perspective. So these are three models or three ways of understanding the universe. And we now know that none of these fits. None of these fits with our empirical observations of the way the universe is. We have a universe that is exploding in creativity, that is flaring forth in new, always new moments of existence. I said this before, that when galaxies were created, the creativity that made a galaxy is incredible. I mean, the intricacies of a snowflake or a waterfall, I mean, those are nothing compared with a galaxy. A galaxy is this intense creativity. And when the galaxies came into being, they happened, boom, you know, in sort of a blink, there were galaxies. And, you know, not just 3 or 5 or 100, but we estimate there are a trillion galaxies, all fashioned. At that time, they were created and they're done. I mean, there aren't any galaxies being created now. Galaxies came into being then, and that was it. I mean, now we're on to something else. The universe is continually moving forward in this progression, and this great dance of creativity moving on. So there's no way from our experience that we could say that the universe is static or fixed. Though Einstein, who working with the with thinking about gravity and the way that gravity interacts, came up with the equations that we still use today for understanding the way the universe is evolving. And he's sitting there, you know, looking at these equations, and it suddenly dawns on him, wait a minute, these equations say that the universe is expanding. I mean, this was completely new. This was within an idea of a fixed universe. Einstein, looking at these equations, goes, this says that the universe is expanding. And, you know, in this moment of insight sort of flashed and then left him, and he goes, no, this can't be it. And so he changed the equation. He put a little term in there that canceled out the expansion because he just couldn't believe it. He just couldn't imagine that the universe was not this static, fixed entity. Reflecting on this in later life, Einstein reflected that he felt that was the single biggest mistake that he had ever made, was in changing the equations. In his life you know, this amazing life of enormous creativity and insight, that was his single biggest mistake. He hit this flash of creativity that he just couldn't accept at the moment. And it wasn't until Edwin Hubble and some other people who were doing observations of the universe discovered that the universe was expanding.
I mean, could look and see that the universe was expanding, that Einstein finally accepted this. Edwin Hubble called Einstein down to California, said, come down here, you've got to see this, you've got to look at this yourself. And so there's this wonderful picture of Einstein peering through this telescope, and Hubble sort of off on his shoulder, you know, standing there with his arms kind of crossed, and Einstein's looking out at the universe, you know, seeing that it's expanding. And you're finally letting this insight sink into him, that the universe is this amazing flaring forth of creativity. It's not static and fixed. It's not cyclical. Galaxies aren't being created today. We don't have that. It's not running down. There's a sense in which the creativity or the order in the universe is being continually created. So, where is the center of creativity? We're back to that question.
Isn't you?
Well, in fact, yes, it is. And let's talk about that. So Edwin Hubble, that was our story. Edwin Hubble is out looking at the galaxies. And in fact, looking at superclusters of galaxies, big clusters of galaxies that are together. And he's peering off in this direction and sees the supercluster of galaxies. And because the way that the light is redshifted, he determines that these superclusters in this direction are moving away from us. Right? They're moving that way. Right? And then he swings his telescope around and looks in this direction. And what do you think he sees?
They're coming to us.
They're going away.
That might be the idea that I would certainly think. These superclusters must be rushing toward us. And we're all being sort of carried along in this great stream away from the center of the universe. But he didn't. These galaxies over here, they're moving away. These galaxies over here, they're moving away from us. These galaxies over here, they're moving away from us. Every place you look in the sky, these superclusters of galaxies are moving away from us. That seems sort of strange. But it gets stranger still. The rate that the galaxies are moving away from us. I mean, maybe this galaxy is moving really slow and these ones over here are moving really fast, or these ones over here are kind of, you know, just dawdling along and these ones over here are zipping away. But no, the rate at which the galaxies, these superclusters of galaxies, are moving depends on how far away they are. The further the galaxies are away, the faster they're moving. And not just sort of randomly, but directly proportional to their distance. So if a galaxy is twice as far away, it's moving twice as fast away from us.
Is everything, let's say there's that center point where there isn't anything anymore.
It's over here.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's over. Everything is moving away from that basically in the same speed. But we are over here, and the things over here aren't moving away as quickly as the things over here on the other side of the board.
Well, let's do that. Let's work with this idea a bit. Let me make sure that you're understanding that part of it, that if a thing is twice as far away, it's moving twice as fast. So if we're here on the Earth looking out at the night sky, and we see a cluster of galaxies, supercluster of galaxies here, and another one way out here. If this one's twice as far away, it's moving twice as fast.
Relative to us.
Well, this is what we see, yeah, from here. If you look out the other direction, you see the same thing. Twice as far away, it's moving twice as fast. So, say if this were 50 miles and this were 100 miles, then if this were moving at 20 miles an hour, then this one would be moving at 40. Okay. So twice as far away, twice as fast. And in every direction. So now go back in time. Think about what happened 100 years ago, and 100 million years ago, and a billion years ago. I mean, instead of moving away, these things are moving toward us, right? And the ones that are twice as far away are moving twice as fast toward us. So eventually they overtake those ones that are moving toward us. So where's the center of creativity? Where's the center of the universe? All these things rushing back in time, they're rushing toward us. Here. This is it. We're at it.
How did you turn that around from rushing away to rushing
back? Going backwards in time. Thinking about going back to the beginning of the universe.
So no matter where you are, you're at the center. You're set. Right.
That the universe, this is the insight from our understanding of the way the universe is that it's omnicentric. That every place in the universe is the center of the universe. Every place, every point is the center of the universe. That's easy to say, but hard to get a handle on. And so I have a little visual aid here to help you. If you take a balloon, and it can be one with things on it or without things on it, doesn't matter. But put some things on it here with the pen. And make some marks on this balloon to represent these superclusters of galaxies. So draw some squiggles and some swirls and some dots and some streaks, and just cover your universe here with galaxies. There are 100 or estimated a trillion galaxies in the universe. So you've got a lot of drawing to do. You want to make the marks rather thick, okay? Because or dark with the ink, because when we expand the universe here, they'll get lighter. So put your squiggles and and not just on one side of me, you've got the other side and kind of near the top. And make this a rich, diverse universe. I've got a little smiley face galaxy on mine.
Since I know how it's really created, I've got turtles on
it. Oh,
wonderful.
Well, cosmic turtle.
While we're doing this, I'm going to run one past you.
Sure.
You might be able to help me with it even. I took a picture of this. It was at a NOAA. And supposedly this was looking back away from all the universe, like the map, this three-dimensional map that they have created of how the universe looks if you were away from it, looking back at it. And with the exception of some things out just in the periphery, there was a fairly symmetrically shaped person about in this posture. Hmm. And this arm was about like this, but outside of that, it was basically like this. It was shaped like a human with some other things on the periphery. And I don't know what, you know, they've had to take a particular angle.
Yeah, that seems a little, I'm not sure I understand the perspective, and we'll talk about this in a minute too, because the idea of stepping outside of the universe and looking at it is an old idea, but it's also very impossible. I mean, where are you standing when you stepped outside of the universe to take a look at it? There's no place that's outside of the universe.
Yeah, but isn't there, well, maybe there isn't. Is there space beyond where there's matter?
Not as our, I mean, beyond where there's matter, there's certainly space between the superclusters of galaxies that seem to be less full of matter.
No.
But apart from that, now there's some photos or conceptual drawings that I've seen of being out at a great distance from our place in the universe, sort of looking back toward our place in the universe.
Yeah.
But not a perspective of stepping outside.
I take the whole show.
So. Yeah. I'd like to see
we'll
that.
Exchange
glasses
and I'll give those
to you.
Yeah.
This is because that's part of the difficulty in imaging this or in understanding this is that the universe doesn't grow up like a plant in a room or like even like our balloon model here expanding into a space. Space is created as the universe expands. Time is created as the universe expands. So there's no way for us to sort of remove ourselves from the universe and look at it.
Good.
But this model kind of helps. So if you've got some superclusters of galaxies on there, what I'd like you to do is blow up the balloon about the size of an orange or so. Maybe a grapefruit.
Oh no! But I like it so much.
You're seeing how some universes, that kind of happened to us. They were lucky to be here.
But you can't see? I don't know if I want to try.
Okay, so with your universe, find a spot on your universe that you like. Just some spot that you feel like, oh, that's a neat spot. Okay, pick a galaxy that looks interesting to you. Okay, find a galaxy. They're going to be kind of light because of the expansion. So if you found that galaxy that looks interesting to you, then look at what's around it. Look at the things that are directly nearby it. Kind of keep that image in mind. The spot that you like, the galaxy that you like, and the things that are sort of directly around it. Okay? Now blow it up a bit bigger. And revisit your spot.
Oh!
We're onward. The universe walks a knife edge here. We just crossed over there. Okay, so refine your galaxy that you like and look at the things that are around it. What do you notice from that?
They're large.
They're larger.
They're all bigger. And they're all further away from it. Everyone, no matter which direction, if you were standing, now imagine that you're an ant, okay? Use your imagination, make yourself into an ant. And not just the size of an ant, but an ant. An ant that has never looked on the top shelf for anything, that's never got down on its hands and knees and looked under the bed for, where are those socks? You know, never sort of thought about moving in this direction, has only thought about moving in this direction. So only on the surface. Okay? And now place yourself as this ant crawling on this surface of the balloon here. The surface is your reality. There's no inside, there's no outside, there's just the surface. Okay? Only the surface. That's what this model does, is it takes all of three-dimensional space and makes it into the surface of the balloon. And then time becomes the dimension that's expanding out. So if you're this ant on this supercluster of galaxies, in this supercluster of galaxies, and you look at all of the other superclusters, they're all moving away from you. And the ones that are further away are moving twice as fast. Twice as far away, twice as fast. Okay. Questions on that?
Is this an accurate model then?
Well, it's accurate to the extent that it's compressed, collapsed, three-dimensional space into two-dimensional surface. But it's only a model. As I said, there's no way we can get outside of the universe to take a look at it. If you're an ant walking on this balloon, there is no outside. There's no inside. There's only the surface. So no matter how far you walk, in whatever direction, you're never going to get off that surface. There's no way to leap off.
Right. But is there anything in the middle? Are there galaxies somewhere in the middle, or a little bit outside of this?
Again, as an ant, you would never...
So we can't tell.
Right, right. We cannot perceive it.
All right.
But now think about it like this. If that third dimension is time, if I go back in time, right, that's this, right? Going back in time, back in time, back in time. All the galaxies are getting closer and closer together. Closer and closer. So where's the point? Here I am on the surface. Where's the point that's the center of creativity? The center point, back in time, back in time, back in time. It's
all the time.
Right here. This is the point. We're at the center of creativity. This is the center of creativity. Let's do some just reflections on that.
We just saw the Big Bang.
That's a big blossom.
That's a big blossom, right. We came up with new names for the Big Bang. Though we did have some universes go Big Bang. These other ones that they didn't.
They have a flasher in the
closet. Just insights or questions or perspectives on that before we move on from there. Just want to get kind of touch base with where you're at. What this?
You're trying.
Go ahead, sir.
Yeah.
You're trying to help us somehow feel that the center of creativity is in ourselves. Right?
Yes, but not just figuratively. Not just sort of in a sense of, I feel the center of creativity within myself. I mean, that may well be true, and that's what I want. I hope that we can develop out of this, but experientially, verifiably, experimentally, through the scientific method, with all of these brilliant minds trying to discount it or disprove it or understand it, that's what we've discovered, that this is the center of the universe. Just as well as if we were on another supercluster of galaxies, that is also the center of the universe. Because the surface of the balloon, which is every place in the universe, as it goes back to a single point, that surface becomes everywhere.
Where does this idea fit in? I remember I read it a couple months ago. That black holes have been discovered, have they not?
Mm-hmm. Well, they have some good contestants for black holes.
Where matter is being sucked in. And thus the statement was that if eventually black holes will expand and all matter, which has been expanding out, will be all contracted back into its original Big Bang, which was that big around at about that time.
Well, there certainly is one model of this expansion of the universe that it does sort of something like that it just, well, not quite like that, it just keeps going, okay? That the expansion just keeps going. Another outcome of this model is that it may keep going to a point and then contract on itself. Because not because of black holes so much, but because of gravity. The amount of matter in the universe is such that gravity draws the universe back together.
So that would indicate cyclical then. If it
that would be right.
Verified.
Right. That would be a cyclical. Now, so far, the best measurements that we have of the amount of matter in the universe and putting them into this model of expansion, the best that we can say so far is that it's a close call whether the universe is just going to keep expanding or it's going to eventually contract. It's right on the edge.
It's going to be stable.
And that's the other side of it, that instead of expanding forever or expanding and contracting, it could just expand to kind of a stable state.
So all the prior theories will be correct.
Maybe. So, right. Then you would have all of them. Maybe that's it. Maybe that's the insight, that all the theories were right. They're just in different times. And right now our time is this time of great creativity. Yeah. There's that question over here.
One of the things that happens on the surface of this balloon is that things stay in the same relationship to each other, mm-hmm. right? Nothing can overtake anything else
right.
on the
right.
when it's happening. And I wonder if there's been any experimental verification, or if we can think of any thought experiments that would try and test the model in that way. Maybe the things like black holes, and there are also ideas of, you know, from science fiction, wormholes and mm-hmm. things like that, where mm-hmm. they actually can get transformed to test and see if the expansion isn't an accurate one. In that sense, it's kind of a topological argument that nothing's going to pass anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Have you explored that at all? Or?
Well, there's a sense in which this model is limited, too, because your little ink blobs on there are fixed. Okay. And if we think of these as superclusters of galaxies, that's not a bad model because the relative velocity of the superclusters compared with the expansion of the universe is small. But actually these things on these little blobs on here would be moving around ever so slightly with some random velocity. Now we've actually seen this. The background radiation, which was discovered or measured for the first time in 1965, is this pervasive radiation that's everywhere in the universe. That's what's left over from when the universe was much more compact, and this was in a very hot state. So the universe in this small, hot place left this radiation that we still see today. And we can see, by looking at the shift of this radiation, how the Milky Way galaxy is moving through that radiation. So you can actually see that radiation isn't uniform, that if we look in one direction, it's slightly redshifted. If we look in another direction, it's slightly blue-shifted. And so we can actually measure our motion relative to what, in some ways, may be our best sort of marker for the surface of that balloon.
Gotcha. Most all observations are following on the fact that the universe isn't perfectly uniform. Because if it were, you wouldn't have galaxies.
Right.
That these superclusters do introduce some irregularities, and you see collisions of galaxies.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, you can, with a pair of binoculars, see some galaxies that did collide a long time ago.
Let me just put in a plug. That seems like a good place to be in the announcements later today for coming out to view some galaxies tonight. Mm-hmm. We're going to meet on the deck of the snack bar out there when they shut down, and dress warmly, dress twice as warm as you think, because you'll be standing around. If you have any binoculars, bring them, because we'll be viewing with some binoculars, and John has brought a small telescope that we're going to use. View some galaxies and some nebula, maybe some. If nothing else, you'll get to see some of the meteor shower that's starting to heat up.
And if you bring your eyes, there's one galaxy you can see with your own eyes.
There
and
you
in
go.
Fact, it's the most distant thing you can see.
So don't leave those at home.
What time?
About 9:45. We'll start to gather up.
noticing some of the things that happen in nature, like the bilateral symmetry or the radial symmetry, it's never perfect. Like, can you see a tree and it isn't a perfect Christmas tree ever, right? They're always a little imperfect and in varying degrees. And so that's what happened here, right? And that's happened. But you also have, you see stasis, you see cyclical, the cyclicality, you see the expansion and the contraction, and it's all going on. It's possible that there's a model of the universe where all these things are happening, where it's expanding out, it'll reach a certain point, and then it will contract, and it'll come all the way back to that singularity again, and it'll burst back out again, just like a star and its implosion will do. So it could then, again, it could be cyclical, so it stays static over time because it just keeps going through this cyclical process, and it expands and contracts. And one of the things that I've noticed in the dynamics of life, period, is that whenever there's this, isn't this or isn't that, it's almost always yes.
Right.
And so how do we marry the two or the three or the four alternatives and find the answer? And most of the time we're looking and trying to focus on one solution. And the reason it takes us so long to find it is because we're not paying attention to the fact that repeatedly there are many dynamics, and all the answers married together are the true answer.
Right.
Well, again, that comes back to, you know, I don't know whether this is the way it happened, but I know that it's true. There can be more than one answer to this. But experience to take out of this balloon, I think, is this one, that we are at the center of this creativity. That creativity that brought forth the universe, that brought forth the galaxies, that brought forth life on Earth, is the same creativity right here, right there, right there, right there. That's that same creativity that you feel welling up within you. So I want to give you a chance to experience some of that creativity, this numinous power flowing out from the center. So we have on the tables here some watercolors for experiencing that. And the marking on the page is a circle. This idea is talked about as a mandala. It's a reflection in circular form. So for your experience with the watercolors today, I want you to reflect on, as you're doing the watercolors, be thinking about the center of creativity being within you, right where you are. You've always known it. You were the center of the universe. Well, now it's been shown that that's true. You're the center of the universe. So experience that and feel what that feels like. So pay attention to that as much as what's going down on the page, okay, from that center. So if you pull a chair around, I think there's some chairs back there already. I think there should be plenty of space for people. Let's stay at the three long tables. I think that will be enough.
You want to set the big tables,
big
not
tables,
on the ground?
Yeah.
My keys, just by doing this?
Are we? I'm not. We can go further.
You could be here and here. Everyone have a spot? So the hardest part of this exercise is getting started. I mean, you're staring at this blank white sheet of paper with this circle on it, and it's like, oh my gosh, what do I do? Am I gonna ruin it? If you're feeling any of that anxiety, if you're not, go right ahead and get started. But if you're feeling any of that, I advise you to just close your eyes, dip your brush in some color, and smear it somewhere on the page. It doesn't have to be in the circle, it doesn't have to be on the paper. Just close your eyes and smear it to get started. Once you get that first mark on there, you're home free.
Can you click the undo button if you don't like it?
No, there's no undo button in the universe.
Continually creative events.
But know that that creativity will happen out of your accident.
That there will be great creativity coming out.
So again, focus on the process. What's it feel like? What's happening within you as you're creating, as this creativity that formed the universe is welling up within you? Pay attention to that.
These are all going to be hung up in the dining room.
Would I do that?
When you finish, you might want it to be. Actually, I did this 2 weeks ago, and someone was hanging theirs up in the dining room because they were just so enthralled by it. But only if you want. So keep working with that. Tell me though, kind of what words are kind of coming out if you were going to describe.
This is
free flow. Okay.
Loosen up.
Yep.
Loosening.
Inferiority.
Inferiority.
Yeah, look at all the artists around. I want a computer.
Want a computer.
You know what happened to Galileo?
What happened?
What,
Dad? What? You
get what? His ideas were not accepted by society, and they were going to have him killed. He couldn't express himself because they were the point they were ready to kill him.
He denied
the
police.
Not that. Did they?
No.
Did they do it then?
Kept on research and kept it to himself.
Attention to the process, what's happening as you're creating here. What does it feel like?
We'll only get bored if you hear a voice.
That's perfect.
Well, there's been some work coming out of the Santa Fe Institute that I mentioned yesterday, thinking about the order inherent in how that's ordered. But that's not it. But in a way, it's sort of the driving for this creative process. It seems to be a lot of order. Maybe order is a bad word. Or it has many connotations of rigidity.
Right.
Yeah, that's why I was thinking of words,
choices, or decisions, or something.
Right.
And intelligence also. Also, intelligence.
Yeah, that may be a way of talking about it. We still have a little time, but I want to get some more words up here. Keep working with the process. If you feel like you're done, then that means you're done, so that's good. If you feel like you're not done, then keep creating. But see if you can, in the midst of that, throw up some more words here about what that feels like or felt like being involved with creating this mandala.
Embarrassed?
We have one honest person.
I got a feeling that I'm being creative and there's no other duplicate anywhere.
Ah, originality.
That's right. Freedom.
Freedom.
Fun.
Fun, yeah.
Permission to have fun.
Ah, right. Great. Is that Narnia?
Inadequate.
Yeah. Inadequate? That's kind of inferiority. Other feelings.
Flow.
Flow.
You both are kind of pastel.
Pastel.
Hopeful.
Hopeful. If you finish, then you're looking at your creation. What words does it evoke? What words come out of messy? Yeah.
I think in both ways, both categories, but inadequate.
Okay.
Words there.
Yeah.
Other.
Unique.
Moving.
Moving.
As in movement, not true.
Right.
I think romantic about
it. Maybe in both ways.
Maybe.
Got what looks like some splatting going on over there. I like that. I like that word, splatting.
Dancing.
Evolving.
Evolving. Great.
Don't know how to quit.
Okay, unending. Never ending.
You know, I'm sitting here doing this, and I'm realizing that I'm doing a painting of the birth. And today's my birthday.
Oh, wow. Wow. That's great. Birthing. I love it. Now, imagine you're taking a hike this afternoon. You're walking along, you're enjoying this valley, and you're sort of experiencing nature, all the beauty around you. And as you're walking along, these sort of feelings are overcoming you. Feelings of uniqueness, fun, freedom, originality, embarrassment, feel loosened up. You feel inferior, inadequate, a flow, the pastel, hopeful. You feel more human. Some of it's messy, moving, splatting. There's birthing going on. These are all words that you could use to describe a hike that you've taken, experience of nature, an interaction with another person, all moments of profound creativity in the world around us. Right? These are the same words coming out of trying to describe this experience of your creativity, of this process that you just happened here in you. So we are deeply connected with this creativity that brought forth the universe. It's just under the surface. All you need is a blank sheet of paper and some, you know, watercolors to get at it.
Permission.
And permission to do it.
Permission to take the time.
The time to do it.
Permission to take the time.
For myself, I'll just leave you with this. I found that this is something that I desperately need in my life. More chances to be creative, to experience creativity, and to just be involved in the process. To forget, there's so much pressure on product around us, to produce something beautiful or wonderful. Just to be in the process of creativity is the point. There's many opportunities in the village this week for you to be involved in creativity. You can go and do pottery, weaving, drawing, watercolor. There's so many things here available for you, and I would just encourage you to get involved in being creative. Be in that process of creativity. Just to put a plug in for tomorrow, we're going to explore more in detail the creative process with Bruce Bishop, who's the potter here in the village, he and I have worked together a little bit over the last 2 weeks on some unique pieces, and he's going to be with us tomorrow talking about the creative process, doing some dialogue about the creative process. So if that's of interest to you, bring your questions, your thoughts to that. I think it's at 3:45.